Iowans love their bicycles, and we're famous for having the oldest, longest, and largest recreational bicycle touring event in the world. But how bike-friendly are we, really? It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, bike culture in Iowa. There have been a lot of questions about bicycle safety following the tragic death of cyclist Wade Frank last month. His death has given those questions urgency, but concerns about bike safety in Iowa are nothing new. We'll talk about safety, bicycle commuting, riding our rural roads, and bike trails. I'll talk with Mark Wyatt of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition and Andrea Bolton of the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going to talk about bike culture in Iowa. Iowa has a reputation for being bike-friendly, and there has been a lot of investment in beautiful bike trails in recent years. But there are many ways in which we lag behind our neighboring states when it comes to trails, bike lanes, laws, and law enforcement. A little later in the hour, we'll check in with the most bike-friendly city in the United States, Minneapolis. But first, there have been a lot of questions about bicycle safety following the tragic death of cyclist Wade Frank last month. His death has given those questions urgency, but concerns about bike safety in Iowa are nothing new. We're going to start the hour with Mark Wyatt. He's executive director of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. Hello, Mark.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. And I know there's been a lot of talk following Wade Frank's death about bicycle safety. And that incident was a tragic incident. A drunk driver rear-ended Wade while he was out as part of a larger bike ride in Des Moines, which is a horrible, horrible event, although it's one of those lightning bolt type events. Why does this bring up a bigger conversation about bike safety?
You know, I think it's as we're searching for answers following Wade's death, we're still mortified at this because this has happened again and again. You know, we keep a list of fatal bicycle crashes on our website. Annually, we have a rite of silence in many cities across Iowa and across the United States to remember victims that were involved in bike crashes. So it's a scene that's playing out again in our minds, and it's time to act. It's time to make some changes in what we're doing in Iowa to make things better.
Now, of course, any death is too many deaths. How does Iowa compare to other states as far as our rate of bicycle deaths go?
You know, we're really kind of middle of the road since we're a smaller rural state. Numbers, we're not comparable that way. We have 3 to 5 bicycle fatalities per year. Sometimes we've had as high as 8. Not a lot of people, but when you put that on a per capita basis, it puts us right in the middle of the rest of the states.
Now, of course, this man that struck Wade Frank was drunk. He did not have a driver's license. He should not have been on the road that day. But there, in a lot of the reactions right after this incident, a lot of people were saying, hey, look at the fact that the repercussions for hitting a cyclist are less dramatic than hitting a pedestrian. What's the difference in how that works in Iowa law?
Yeah, it's not exactly the case. Iowa law is fairly neutral across the board. It doesn't really matter what vehicle you're in. However, the penalties are pretty light. For a serious injury, you get a $500 fine and a 3-month suspension of your driver's license if you're convicted. And that is if they bring the enhanced penalties with it. For a fatality, that's a $1,000 fine and a 6-month revocation. Now, the DOT will instill usually a year-long administrative revocation, and that's been held up by the Supreme Court. $1,000. Generally, that's what we see across the country. It's somewhere in that range for fatal crashes, with the exception of Oregon, and I believe that's a $12,000 fine. If you do community service in traffic safety, attend a driver improvement program, and serve out your suspension without any other issues, that fine can be reduced. There's other states that are doing much better. We're just certainly in the middle of the road.
Now, of course, we're talking about fatal crashes, and that's the extreme case. That's the tragedy. But there are many other lesser tragedies where bicycles and cars wind up in conflict with each other. In Iowa, do we have a way to track bike car accidents?
Yeah, the DOT does a pretty good job of tracking. We keep tabs of the data. Every year we ask for a new data set of all the bike crashes that happen in Iowa and do some analysis on that to figure out what's changing and what's going on. I know just from a conversation yesterday that the reporting is going to be increasing. There's much more checkboxes that the police officer investigating has to go through non-motor vehicle crashes. So we're enthused by that in some sense to know more what's happening behind the scenes. And I think that's going to be important as we move forward.
Now, I was looking through this list of fatalities on your website, and it seems to me that the most common kind of accident that results in a fatality is when a car hits a bicycle from behind. Is that the most common kind of bike accident?
No, actually, intersections are a bigger problem for crashes. Crashes with injuries, I should say that. Fatal crashes are usually a rural hit from behind sort of incident. But if you look at the injuries across the board, there's about 4,000 crashes over the past 10 years. Most of them are happening on city streets. A lot of them are happening at intersections, and predominantly it's failure to yield right away from the motor vehicle, from the contributing factor, and a variety of reasons from the bicyclist if there's a contributing factor there.
Now, of course, remind us again, I mean, when a bicycle is on the street, the cyclist is subject to the laws that a car is subject to as well. But they also have the same rights.
Yeah, Iowa Code says that bicyclists or operators of bicycles have the same rights and duties except by nature where they don't apply. So, for example, we have people under 16 years of age that can ride a bicycle. You can bike on a trail or a sidewalk where you couldn't do that with your motor vehicle. So there is some latitude that the law has for bicycles. But when you're operating on the road, you should follow the same traffic rules as motor vehicles. I think the big key if you're operating a bicycle is be visible and be predictable.
Do you feel that in Iowa, cars and drivers give bicycles that kind of respect?
90% of the time. Everybody that you talk to that rides a bike can tell you that case where the motorist wasn't paying attention. It happens more often than it should. Motorists need to stay focused on the road. They need to drive sober. They need to not be distracted while they're driving. And they need to slow down. I think that's one of the big keys is that sometimes people get driving too fast and slow down and give yourself time to react.
Now, of course, every person can also tell you the story about a cyclist who is being disrespectful or dangerous as well. Do you feel like the cycling community respects those rules as well?
Yeah, I think most of the time. I think this is a society-wide problem, and I think that you could put the 90 to 95% on the bicyclists too, that there's that 5% of group that aren't respecting the rules of the road, and they may not respect the rules of the road in their car either. So I think that's across the board for society.
So in Iowa, what do you think we are not doing legally to protect bicyclists? Where do you feel the holes are?
You know, we put the bicycle laws that apply to a bicycle on the front and back of a double-sided business card. There's not really many laws that apply. And it pretty much jumps into the motor vehicle laws. So there's a lot of policy issues that we just haven't addressed. Door zone protection is a really great one. Where
explain that for me.
If you're parked parallel parked along a road, it's the person that parked their car should have to check their mirror before they open their door. That's not only something that can prevent injuries to bicyclists, but also the person parking their car, motorists that are driving along that same stretch of road, because the door will swing out 4 feet. I mean, that's a really good one that we've just not been able to address in the legislature. Simple things like using your right hand to signal a right turn. Seems pretty intuitive, and I think a lot of bicyclists use that signal, but the legislature just hasn't wanted to address that.
Okay, but
a lot of other states have.
When I was a kid and I was learning to ride my bicycle, I was not taught to use my right hand to signal a right turn. Where is this code, and how are we teaching people?
Sure. The Uniform Vehicle Code is added the right-hand right-turn signal. So that's what we're basing this on, is there's kind of a uniform driving code across the land, but Iowa just hasn't adopted that. We teach the left-hand left-turn signal where your arm's bent upward, mm-hmm. But it's really hard to teach a third grader that, because it's not very intuitive to raise your left arm when you're going to be turning right. But there's other policy issues as simple as changing lanes to pass bicycles. We see it as what's in the code. The DOT has updated the driver's manual to say that motorists should change lanes to pass bicycles. But all too frequently, that's not the practice.
All right. So if you come up behind a bicycle on a road, and if you can't change lanes, you need to slow down and follow the bicycle. And then when it's time to get around them, you need to get all the way on the other side of the road. That's the law. But you're saying that that's not enforced?
Yeah. Well, first step is slowing down. The second step is passing when it's safe. We're seeing incidences that this happens, and it's really hard to say, the motorist buzzed me without any evidence to prove it. We have a court case that's happening tomorrow in Benton County, where a bicyclist was riding along on a Benton County road and had video cameras on both the front and the back of his bike, buzzed by a motorist, and the motorist is claiming or is fighting that through traffic court. And that's going to be upheld tomorrow, or going to trial tomorrow. So we're really anxious to see if that video enforcement is something that can be moving forward in the state.
All right. So the hope of that bicyclist is that this driver will have to pay a fine, or what is the hope for outcome from the cyclist point of view?
Yeah, there's an actual fine that says you can't steer unreasonably close to a bicyclist. We had that passed in 2010. Representative Kresig from Cedar Falls was able to get that into the appropriations bill and passed it into law. It's one of the higher fines for moving traffic violations, $250 fine. That's been one of those kind of important things that we want to see happen is that law enforced so people are safe and you don't have to worry about those incidences.
So this court case is a major test of that.
Yeah, we think so. We've seen Supreme Court cases, the Vanscons versus Mills in 2001, where the person was biking along, hit from behind. In the court case, they said, well, you should have had to pull over. And the court said, no, that's ludicrous. You wouldn't apply that standard to motor vehicles.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about bicycle culture in the state of Iowa. With me, Mark Wyatt, Executive Director of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about bicycle culture in the state of Iowa. We've been focusing on bicycle safety so far this hour. Mark Wyatt is here. He's executive director of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. Now, one of the things Iowa has been working very hard on in recent years is expanding the bicycle trails in the state of Iowa. We've been talking a lot about riding on roads. Andrea Bolton is trails coordinator for the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. She's with us now. Hello, Andrea.
Hello. How are you guys?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Now, I think the last time we really focused on the expansion of the Iowa trail system, it was about 4 years ago when we were talking about the High Trestle Trail being opened to the public, which was very, very exciting to a lot of cyclists in Iowa and particularly in central Iowa. Tell me what's going on in trail expansion in Iowa today.
Well, I think we have a lot of great projects that have kind of been spurred by the momentum of the High Trestle Trail. We're seeing many more trails starting to be developed or have their corridors being planned. In particular, I'm working with the folks from Marshall and Hardin counties to complete a It will be a spectacular trail when it's all done, a 34-mile trail from the city of Marshalltown up to Steamboat Rock in the Pine Lake State Park area.
Which is an incredibly beautiful part of the state.
It will be amazing all along the river, Iowa River there, and just kind of goes through some pretty great places to show off the aesthetics of our state. In addition to that, we have several other smaller spurs that are either augmenting existing trail systems, connecting communities to each other, or closing some gaps on some lengthy trail systems. We're working with folks in Belmont right now to close a gap between their community trail and the Prairie Land Trail that would take their would link Belmont all the way up to Mason City. And so there are... There's so many different little projects like that going on. It's hard to take the time to list them all out and to give them their proper due. But I think we're really seeing the excitement and the catalyst that High Trestle Trail and Raccoon River Valley Trail and those trails have done created over the past few years to start engaging communities and counties to want to do more.
Now, when you're talking about purchasing corridors or closing gaps, can you give me an idea of what kinds of challenges you encounter when you're doing that work? I assume that funding is the biggest one.
Funding is always a challenge. Here in Iowa, there's really only about two or three funding sources that are somewhat dependable. And those funding sources are administered through the Department of Transportation and Department of Natural Resources. But those funding pools can change year to year based on the legislature. And building a trail, whether it's just acquiring the corridor or actually doing the construction, the development of the corridor, can cost millions of dollars. And those funding pools only have $2-3 million in them. So as I mentioned, we have so many communities across the county or across the state, so many counties across the state that are looking at how they can recreate the High Trestle Trail or the Raccoon River Valley Trail. The funding is really competitive and it's hard to get. And so that's, I would say, 100% one of our greatest challenges.
Is there also a challenge of getting the right to put a trail through land? I mean, you have to work with a lot of different landowners and a lot of different interests, I can imagine.
Absolutely. And I would say that would be our second biggest. Generally, the work that Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation does tends to focus on former railroad corridors. And while it may seem a little bit easier, because in those cases, we are only working with one landowner, so to say, we have the complications of working with a railroad, which in some cases can be as complicated as working with a federal government or a foreign government, for that matter. And if it's not with a railroad, then it is really looking at trying to piece together, 5 to 10 mile corridor with individual landowners. And that can be anything from 5 landowners to 30, depending on your project. And then you also have to take into consideration the topography differences and the drainage and and also weighing that against providing the best user experience as you're trying to find that corridor. So between funding the project and finding the right path, those are the challenges and the struggles, but I will not say that it hasn't seemed to slow anybody down. The demand is still out there. Every day I receive more and more phone calls of how do we get started? How do we build a trail in our community?
Now, of course, the work to turn rail beds into trails has been going on for many years. There are a number of different trails in Iowa that meet that description. There was a period of time where focusing on kind of the crushed limestone trail was the focus. In your work today, what is your priority as far as the trail surface? Are you only focusing on paved trails?
The Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation itself does not really have a priority when it comes to the surface type. That decision is really up to the local jurisdiction. The foundation doesn't itself own any trails. We help to guide cities and counties through that process of building their own. And so surface type really depends on what's best for them. Concrete and asphalt can sometimes be easier to maintain and also easier for those cities and counties to replace themselves because they have certain equipment. On the other side, some cities and counties may prefer that crushed limestone because it is a little less expensive and the replacement costs are not as high as repairing a concrete surface may be.
Now, of course, a lot of people would like to use their bikes for bicycle commuting. A lot of people are trying to promote bicycle commuting. Do you think about these trails as transportation corridors or are they recreational?
When we first started out, and when I first started out about 10 years ago talking about trail development, it was really easy for people to call these recreational trails, rec trails or bike trails. But if you really get down and look at what we're trying to accomplish with developing these trails, it's really about connecting people and destinations. So it's been one of our priorities to make sure that people realize that these are, in essence, a way to commute and a way to travel between things or between destination points, whether that's your neighborhood to a park or your house to the school or your house to your place of work. That's really commuting and that's really transportation. You may be doing it in a way that you enjoy more than driving in a car in traffic. But as much as it is for your health and wellness and leisure, you're really accomplishing transportation commuting purposes.
In just a moment, we're going to check in with Minneapolis, and this is the city that has been named again and again the most bike-friendly city in the United States. But before we do that, I mean, Mark, I'd love to get your take on, I know you're a big fan of the trails that have been built in the state of Iowa. How do you feel Iowa's doing compared to some of our neighbors and other states as far as developing trail systems?
You know, in the trail world, we're probably leading, being a capital of trails. And it's a lot to do with the topography. I talked with my friends from Oregon, and they've chose to sign on-road bike routes out there. They've got several dozen of bike routes that they have because they don't have trails. They don't have those 30, 50-mile loop trails that Iowa has. You know, they don't have the railroads, and they have mountains in the way and federal lands that kind of prohibit crossing and things like that. So we have a real gift here with the trail system. And I think the economics is also paying off. Is we're seeing our last economic study was $365 million a year was generated from bicycling. So that's $1 million a day that bicyclists are spending across the state. It's valuable. And that investment is having a benefit.
A lot of people, of course, enjoy riding in the countryside in Iowa. I have a couple of friends who recently moved here from other states, and they've been saying to me, riding in rural Iowa is terrifying. One of them has moved here from Wisconsin, which I know is considered to be sort of a mecca or utopia for rural cycling. A lot of paved roads, thanks to the dairy industry there. But of course, you know, if you're going to do a lot of riding, you can't always be on a trail. How do you feel about riding in rural Iowa?
Yeah, we have areas of the state that are just simply trail impaired. They're probably not going to – they don't have the rail corridors or they don't have the funding to be able to install the trails. Or it's going to take a lifetime to make that connection. On the other hand, we have some really great rural roadways. We found out with the DOT bike plan that is in the works, you know, there's 25% of Iowa's roadways has less than 300 cars per day. So where you have the trail where you may never see a bicyclist on, we also have roads that do the same thing. So there's a lot of work being done right now. We have an iowabikeways.com website where we're mapping the routes that bicyclists frequently use. But there's also some other unique things out there. There's gravel and dirt bicycling that's happening now. Iowa County near Amana just signed two different routes, about 25 miles of gravel road routes. And there's a new kind of emphasis on gravel bike riding. So there's a lot of great routes out there, but unfortunately you have to find them, and hopefully our website will help people navigate that.
And you may have to embrace gravel.
At some point, I don't think that's necessarily always the case. We have a lot of paved roads. We have a lot of paved roads, but we also have a lot of gravel roads. So there's a segment of people that just love that. And there's a segment of people that don't. So there's something for everybody here.
We're talking about bicycle culture in the state of Iowa. With me, Mark Wyatt, Executive Director of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. Andrea Bolton is Trails Coordinator for the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. And with us on the line now is Ethan Foley. He's Executive Director of the Minneapolis Bicycle Coalition. And Minneapolis is rated year after year the most bike-friendly city in the United States. Hello, Ethan.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And we were just looking at some of the reports over the weekend. The Des Moines Register published an article about bike culture in the state of Iowa, reporting some of the awards that the state has gotten in our cities for bike friendliness. Des Moines gets a bronze award from the League of American Bicyclists, and a lot of cities in Iowa fall into that bronze category. You are there in Minneapolis, which of course is considered to be a community that is far more bike friendly. Can you give me an idea of what Minneapolis has that makes it so bike friendly?
Well, I think at the core we have had a tradition of elected officials and people that have supported the trails and bike routes that make it possible to serve bicyclists well, and a full range of people to bicycle and feel comfortable doing so. So we've had it for more than 100 years. Our trail system has kind of been embedded here in Minneapolis. And that's really the basis of our great bicycle network. And then in the last 20, 30 years, we've really started to recognize that that trail system doesn't just have to be serve a recreational purpose, but it can also connect people from where they live to where they work, or to the university, or to where they're getting groceries or to school. And so we've started to complement that with more on-road bike lanes and now protected bike lanes, really to enhance the asset that we have in the trails and make it serve our city in the best way possible.
What kind of infrastructure has that required to really integrate the trails into the community?
Well, you know, a lot of it, honestly, is we've had a number of roads that there was basically excess capacity. They were maybe built with projections for the amount of car traffic that didn't pan out. And so we were able to in some cases, there were streets that the traffic speeds were a real problem, and we're able to really integrate in bike lanes or buffered bike lanes or protected bike lanes into those streets as they were either being repaved or reconstructed at a very low cost typically, and really was able to just take advantage of that kind of excess space. That's primarily what we've done, and now we're really at the stage where we're looking at, okay, we've done a lot of that low-hanging fruit, the connections that are relatively easy. And where are our kind of last gaps, our biggest gaps, and especially in connecting through and serving into our downtown area comfortably? And we're really starting to tackle those. And those are a little more challenging, but I think every community has a lot of those low-hanging fruit, per se, of streets where you can really add bike lanes or other things relatively easily and inexpensively.
Now, you are also working toward protected bike lanes, which is a movement that's just beginning in a couple of communities in Iowa. What makes a bike lane protected? How does that work?
Sure, yeah. A protected bike lane is really we're trying to take more of a trail environment onto a street. So what you have is you have some kind of physical barrier between where people bicycle and where they drive and also where they walk. It could be as simple as there are these things called, they're basically flexible plastic posts. That's a really inexpensive way to do a protected bike lane. Or it could be parked cars, or it could be a concrete curb. Or it could be a planter with a green space added in as well. So we're really starting to expand that here in Minneapolis. We have a plan to build out 55 miles of protected bikeways over the next 5 to 10 years, just to really connect into our about 100 miles of trails. Into the downtown areas, the university areas, other places that aren't as well served comfortably. And the purpose of protected bikeways is to most streets, pretty intimidating environment for people to bicycle on, for most people. And recognizing that if we're going to really be a great bicycle city, if we're going to be a great place, we want to have bikeways that don't just serve people that are 30 and active and healthy and ready to go to the road, but also serve, you know, everybody from kids going to school to grandparents, you know, trying to go to the grocery store. And that's really the intent of protected bikeways, and it's been shown around the country to be very effective at doing so.
Now, you have more than 4% of people in Minneapolis or in Minnesota that bike to work?
In Minneapolis, we have about 4% that bike to work on an average throughout the year. So obviously it's a lot more in the summer and less in the winter. Across the state, more than 50% of people do bicycle at some point during the year. The commute share for the state is much lower than in Minneapolis proper. But we still we do better than the national average across the state as well.
And that number has been increasing dramatically with the implementation of these bike-friendly measures, right?
Oh, for sure. Yes. I mean, we have more than doubled, almost 2.5 times the number of bicyclists today in Minneapolis that we did 10 years ago. Well, and that was more than double the amount that were 10 years before that. So, you know, I think if you start to make investments, if you start to support that with other policy measures to make it easier and more comfortable and have people who are biking be seen as just normal people trying to get where they're going.
Ethan Folley, we need to go now, but Ethan Folley, Executive Director of the Minneapolis Bicycle Coalition, thank you. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about bicycling culture in the state of Iowa, and we would love to hear from you. What are your questions? What are your concerns? What are your experiences? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Andrea Bolton. She's Trails Coordinator for the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. Mark Wyatt is also here, Executive Director of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. And we were just talking with Ethan Folley, who is Executive Director of the Minneapolis Bicycle Coalition. And so, Mark, when you hear Ethan talking about all the things that they've done in Minneapolis to make that city bike-friendly, let's look around the state of Iowa a little bit. We don't have a community that really matches up to that kind of investment.
You know, the one that's really going forward right now is Cedar Rapids. Since the 2008 flood, they've looked at how do we connect our community and do it in a way because we have kind of a blank slate to deal with. And so they've been doing some innovative work there. They've also been doing some innovative financing, taking a larger percentage, about 80% of their transportation funding, and putting it into bicycling and walking projects. It has taken a bike coordinator, Brandon White, up there, a lot of work to and the city engineers and bike coordinator in Cedar Rapids to chase down projects. And because these, you know, projects are 4, 5, 10 years in the making before they find pavement. And so adding that bicycle and pedestrian component, you have to have somebody there that's working on it. And I think that's one of the big keys that we've seen in the Cedar Rapids model.
Well, and Ethan was talking about how dramatically bicycle commuting has increased in the city of Minneapolis with these investments that the city has made. What's in it for a city to make those kind of investments? What's the payoff? I mean, I know it makes bicyclists happy, but what's the payoff for the community?
You know, I think you have a more livable community. I think you attract a more creative workforce. And I think that's important to cities right now. We've seen the Cedar Valley area up in Waterloo and Cedar Falls, some of the businesses up there starting to say, you know, we need a more competitive workforce. We need more millennials. And they want to live in cities that they can bike and walk and use transit. And so I think that's important. I think there's also an associated payoff that car infrastructure does cost a lot of money. It takes a lot of money to build a trail, but to build an interstate highway or a city street or parking, it takes a lot more money to do that. So if you can reduce some of that, it helps. And then finally, we're also seeing with bicycle infrastructure, there's a safety component. New York City's been showing in areas with bike lanes reduced safety, not just for bicyclists, across the board for motor vehicles. We've seen that somewhat in Iowa and Ingersoll, that rear-end collisions were reduced by 50% when they added bike lanes and went to a three-lane design. So that has some costs associated with it too. But to save people from being involved in crashes, that's even better.
Now, again, I want to return to Des Moines and this article published in the Des Moines Register over the weekend. One of the statistics that they cited was that earned Des Moines that bronze status as opposed to a silver status is that there's only 0.2% of the population that commutes by bicycle. That's incredibly low.
Yeah, and we're finding that that's probably about the same across Iowa. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done with the infrastructure. If people don't think there's a safe place to ride, it's going to make it harder and harder for them to choose to go by bicycle. Times we need to make bicycling and walking a more convenient option than driving.
Now, I live in Iowa City. You also live in Iowa City, which is a community with more bicycle commuters. Does that necessarily mean that it's a safer place to ride your bike?
You know, somewhat. It's the canary in the coal mine sort of thing, that if you see more people bicycling, they must feel that it's safer. But sometimes in college communities, you're going to find that more people bicycle just because that's the means that they have available to them. I think it's the infrastructure investment that's been the game changer. I think protected bike lanes have been able to kind of widen the age range of people that would use that type of facility. A lot of times in engineering circles, they call them the 8-year-old to 80-year-old facility, because you're going to feel safe if you're in that age range.
I want to read an email, and of course, you're welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is an email from Larry. He says, you're a bicyclist and want to travel on roads and highways with vehicular traffic? 1, wear high visibility clothing and helmets. 2, have safety devices on your bike, reflectors and bright flashing lights. 3, observe traffic laws. They apply to bicyclists too. 4, do not ride a recumbent bicycle. If you do, you might not be seen until it's too late. And Mark, I saw you nod your head to the first 3. What's your response to something like that? I mean, the way that's written makes me feel that Larry's not a big fan of bikes on the road. But what kind of responsibility do the bicyclists have?
You know, I saw somebody on Facebook yesterday joking about bicycles and you know, riding on a busy street, and that they could be an organ donor. And I thought how violent and antisocial that seemed to me, that it really made me sad that somebody's transportation choice created this lack of empathy for their life. And I think that we as a society, as a community in Iowa, that we need to be very careful and take our responsibility driving very seriously, and not have that callous attitude towards other people on the road. They're not bicyclists. They're people, and they're family members, they're friends, they're coworkers. And we got to remember that.
But on the other hand, visibility is incredibly important to your safety if you're a bicyclist. That is something that you should take seriously.
Absolutely. And I think people riding bicycles need to be predictable, need to be visible. If you're riding at night, you should have lights or reflectors on that are going to make you visible to others. You should be in places that you're going to be seen. If you're hiding kind of behind parked cars and you're darting out, that's potential for crashes, and you don't want to have that happen. If you remember from Driver's Ed, you just got to have your idea that nobody else sees you, and you got to make sure that you're taking care of yourself when you travel on the roadways. But on the other hand, we need motorists to take their responsibility very seriously too. They're operating a 4,000-pound vehicle, and they need to take that very seriously.
Andrea, with the trail systems in Iowa, are there concerns about trail safety and trail etiquette among bicyclists?
I think anytime you have a group of people moving in a direction or in opposite directions together, there is a concern of safety. From the perspective of trail users, yes, you know, there's people trails are viewed as kind of that safer place, right or wrong, but safer place compared to the road. So you do have the families, the children out using the trail, and you have the people running with headphones on and other people walking their dogs on long leashes. And so there's a potential for a variety of conflicts that can happen just within that corridor. But then you bring in the challenge of intersections. And when you're in a car and you're driving down the road, you look left and right to see if you have any other car traffic coming at you as you make a turn. But you may forget to look at that trail crossing. And you may also forget to factor in the speed difference between someone riding their bike and how far out they are, someone running and how far out they are, than a potential car conflict. So we also see that as a safety issue. And then from the cyclist or the user standpoint, making sure that you are yielding to the oncoming traffic every time you are crossing those intersections. I think those are really our biggest safety concerns when we talk about trails, just user conflict and intersection conflict.
Now, one of the things that I've noticed as a trail user is that there is not really a set trail etiquette. Whenever I pass someone, I alert them. I say passing on the left. I can't tell you how many times people have whizzed past me and my children, and particularly I worry about the kids because if they get startled, you know, they're kids, and they may be a little unpredictable, and they're not necessarily as keyed into listening for other bicycles or listening for traffic. Is there sort of a standard trail etiquette that people are taught or that is posted on trails? Do we need something like that?
Well, I think that may be the problem. There is yes, to some extent, there is a standard trail etiquette that you should be passing on the left, just like in any other day-to-day instance, whether it's walking down the hallway, the stairs, or driving down the street. You should be passing to your left, and you should be letting the people ahead of you know that you're coming. In the same sense, I brought up dog walkers. You should keep your dog tight to you. So if you are having somebody come up behind you, you're not potentially causing that conflict. One of our main concerns is making sure that you are loud. Mark says visible. I'll say visible and loud, especially when you're a bicyclist is passing an equestrian or somebody running with headphones, and really making sure that your presence is known. The problem is while I know that there are a standard set of etiquette, and you may see etiquette or trail rules signs posted every now and then at trailheads, you don't get that class that's taught like you would with a driver's ed or that you would do with a hunter safety. It's really something that you have to be aware and be present and read those signs when you park your car at the trailhead or get on a trail and pick it up from other users.
Mark, I'd love you to weigh in on that as well, as far as, you know, bicyclists using the kind of etiquette that they've been taught.
Yeah, you know,
or haven't been taught.
Trails, especially ones that are iconic, like the High Trestle Trail, really draw new bicyclists out. And events and things like that we do, we're noticing there's a lot of new bicyclists that come out. So there's a responsibility on our end to do some education and to make sure that people can learn as they go. But there's also kind of this social responsibility that we need to just make sure that people are safe. So you as the bicycle user, even though that you're kind of this pro that can go down the trail with no problem, need to know that there's going to be kids with training wheels that don't know those rules. And you need to slow down and make sure that they're safe. This is just, you know, a small transition from riding on the road, where people in their cars that have brakes and visibility and turning signals need to make sure that other people using the roadway are being safe. So it's the faster moving traffic always needs to yield and look out for slower moving traffic.
We have a lot of people joining in on this conversation on Twitter. This one is from someone who says a huge cost. A cause of bicycle fatalities is intoxicated cyclists. This should be part of the conversation. And I want to mention with Wade Frank's incident when he was killed, he had not been drinking. I mean, the driver was intoxicated. He was not. But bicyclists have a reputation for partying. I mean, RAGBRAI is not a sober experience for a lot of people. And there are lots of bicycle bars in the state of Iowa. Is that a real concern, Mark?
We're not seeing that translated into the injury statistics that we're getting. And maybe with the new data sets that's going to be coming out, we'll have more information on that. But alcohol is a contributing factor we haven't seen. We also have seen the alcohol as a contributing factor to motorists, usually in urban areas, generally at night. Probably because you have higher concentrations of bicyclists in those urban areas at night and higher concentrations of drivers that aren't sober in the urban areas versus the rural areas. So it hasn't been as big of a factor as drivers being distracted or not focused on the road.
Well, you mentioned distraction, and Andrea mentioned people with headphones, earbuds, that kind of thing. I see a lot of bicyclists wearing headphones or listening to earbuds while they ride. Is that a safety concern for you?
You know, I think there's a personal responsibility there that the bicyclist needs to be aware of their surroundings. And if they can do so with earbuds in, if they think they can safely do so and it's not contributing to the safety of others, I think that's fine. But if it can't, they need to make that decision to do that, just as anybody traveling the roadway needs to do that. Cars have radios in them and a lot of soundproofing and air conditioners. So hearing what's going on around you, I think for bicyclists is just a good idea to make sure that you're aware of your surroundings.
This is an email from Elizabeth. I haven't owned a car for over 8 years. For the past 2 years, I cycle in Ames to work, to school, with my grandsons, and to all my other activities. It's not safe, and I find drivers often are oblivious to cyclists and pedestrians. We need infrastructure, but we also need driver training regarding the rights of cyclists and pedestrians on the road. I also have another comment from a bicyclist in Ames talking about animosity of drivers towards cyclists. She says she's repeatedly been shouted at outside of through a car window saying, hey, there's a bike lane over there, or there's a bike path over there. Why are you on the road? Do we have a sort of adversarial culture?
It seems absurd, but it exists. Why don't you use the bike lane thing is really you got to understand where the bicyclist is going. There's no reason that I can't access the same businesses that other people can. And sometimes that means I need to take the street route versus taking where the trail is going to take me. Those bike lanes and trails, as you saw on the Des Moines map, don't go everywhere. There's a lot of limitations to where they go. And so I think you need to just be able to expect and be aware the bicyclists will be everywhere.
I'd like to add to that is we really need to do a better job. I need to do a better job of really explaining to the public that, yes, we have bike trails, but the biking system or the multi-use system is more than the trails. Roads are just as important to get to those destinations, as Mark mentioned, as anything else. And so making sure that people are aware that exactly what Mark said, you have to get off the trail sometime to get where you want to go. And that shouldn't be a punishment, or it shouldn't be a scary thing to do. It should be an easy transition. And we need to do a better job of that here.
Well, and there's also a difference between how a bicyclist will ride if they are a bicycle commuter and they're working hard to get from one place to another, or if they're out for a recreational ride and not in a hurry.
you see a difference between a morning bike commuter and an afternoon bike commuter. They generally take their time going home, but going to work, you're on a schedule and you need to get there in time. I think you do see a difference in recreational cyclists versus one that may be accessing the streets. But you shouldn't expect that. If you're a motorist, you should just understand that bicyclists may do something that you're not expecting. And I think that's one of the basic tenets that you learned in driver's ed, is to expect the unexpected.
Now, we are nearly out of time, but Andrea, I'll let you give me a plug here in a moment. We heard from Joan, who said, can one of your guests refer us to a website where we can find bike trails around Iowa? Do you have a favorite resource?
Well, you can definitely come to Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation's website or download the Iowa by Trail app. It is a smartphone app that the foundation recently released where you can find all of the trails across Iowa and locate yourself, find your closest trailhead, and jump on and visit all of the points of interest you might want to see along the way, from restaurants to camping grounds.
All right. Yep. Thank you so much, Andrea Bolton, Trails Coordinator for the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, Mark Wyatt, Executive Director of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.